Hi, everyone, and welcome to another VibrationsOfTheSoul.com podcast. My name is Terry, and today I have an amazing guest with me, and his name is Jerry Marzinski. Jerry is a psychotherapist with over 35 years of experience working with schizophrenic and other psychiatric patients in state hospitals, state prisons, and hospital emergency rooms. Jerry worked in one of the largest psychiatric hospitals called Central State Hospital, which was located in Georgia. And this is where he spent the first 7 years of his career studying the voices that those labeled psychotic heard. His formal academic training comprises a BA in psychology from Temple University, a master's degree in counseling from the University of Georgia, and 2 years of study in a PhD psychology program. So he joins us today to share about his discoveries while practicing as a psychotherapist and why he began to question the psychiatric medical authorities and their view on treatment and diagnosis of mental illness. What makes Jerry extremely interesting and fascinating to talk to is that through his own direct experiences, paranormal experiences, he talks about how these voices or entities are working through our own minds via thought control. Some call it thought injections, or we can call it mind control, and how we think that many times they're our own. So he's currently working on a book called An Amazing Journey into the Psychotic Mind, Breaking the Spell of the Ivory Tower, with co-author Sherry Sweeney, and that's coming out in December. And I'll just give Jerry's website, keyholejourney.com. And with his co-author, Sherry, which is That's a Lie program, you can learn more about as a tool. You can find that at keyholejourney.wordpress.com. So welcome, Jerry, and thank you. Thank you for being here.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, we were talking about it, you know, kind of where to start. We only have a limited an hour or so, so that's going to go really fast. So those of you out here listening are supposed to be here because there's some pretty strange information. And like I was telling Terry, had I not experienced it myself, I still wouldn't believe it. So you know, whatever you were doing that drew you to this broadcast, you're supposed to have this information because there's a lot of people that can't handle it. You know, they can't deal with it. So my journey started, you know, I guess with my family. My dad was verbal and physically abusive. And like I was telling Terry, that helped a lot with, you know, I'd push him to the verge of exploding and then back off. And the times I misjudged, I paid for it. So that later on, that came in invaluable in working with florid psychotic patients who were really unstable. And how far can you push these guys and get the information you need or get them information they need without them blowing up in your face?
Mm-hmm.
So when I first got to college, and I mistrusted authority. I mean, there are several different things that happened, that thing after thing after thing, don't trust authority. And you know, I majored in psychology and criminology. And the thing I hated about psychology is you could not see what was happening. You didn't have any access to a clinical population at all. Mm-hmm. So, except for experimental psychology, where you could go into the rat lab and do these things and watch the results, you just had to believe what they were telling.
Right.
And I had a real hard time with that. And so there were two things that stuck in mind, probably a lot more. But the first one was in the abnormal psych, we were given a reading by some research article done by a PhD psychologist that basically said if two crazy people met and they had the same delusion, one of them would have to drop that delusion, pick up some other one. And I'm like, you know, why would that have to happen? You know, what reason would there be for that? What, you know, that just doesn't sound right, but there's no way to check it out. And so I just logged it into my brain. And probably 20 years later, I was in Central State Hospital on one of the psych wards, and a new guy came up, and I was watching him. And I hadn't seen him before, so I didn't know what he was up to or what his deal was. So I was kind of listening to him, and it was like he was talking on a telephone to these voices, and I was hearing one end of the conversation. It wasn't like word salad. It made sense. I mean, he was actually speaking in complete sentences, and apparently they were talking to him in complete sentences, and he was walking around arguing with these things. So then he caught me, and I went up to him, and he kind of shut up. And I said, I'm Jerry. I'm your psych for this unit. Are you new here? And he goes, yeah, I just got here a couple of days ago. And I said, what's your name? And he goes, I'm Jesus Christ. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I looked at him and I said, no, you can't be Jesus Christ because I am. And I sat there waiting for what he's going to do. Let me see if what they taught me there was it had any validity to it. And he thought about it, and he's like, oh, yeah. And he looks at me and goes, oh, we can both be Jesus Christ. And he walks off. I'm like, oh, yeah? Okay, so what other horseshit did they feed me? Let me see, what was the other one that we said? Oh, yeah. Schizophrenics are too disorganized to do any advanced planning. The episode that blew that one away was really strange. So this happened on another psychiatric unit other than one I was working on. And my friend calls me up and he goes, hey, you need to get over here real quick before they clean this up. I said, what are you talking about? Yeah, just get over here. And on that unit was the state hospital, they didn't have the best psychiatrist in the universe. You know, they were kind of like whoever they could get their hands on, especially at Central State, which was in the middle of Georgia, which at that time was in the middle of nowhere. And so I went over there, and that was Edge Unit. And that unit was run by a psychiatrist who dressed, acted, had a beard like, and smoked a pipe like Sigmund Freud.
Oh, wow.
This guy was a weird duck.
Yeah.
The first time I saw him, I looked at Ed, I kind of shook my head. I said, that's your psychiatrist? They go, yeah, that's our psychiatrist. So, there were a lot of the schizophrenics didn't like psychiatrists. And this one schizophrenic really, really didn't like him. So, what this guy did, the patient, at like 3 or 4 in the morning, he was on like the third floor of the psych unit. He snuck down 3 floors past 3 attendance stations at like 3 or 4 in the morning, picked the lock on this psychiatrist's office, crawled up in the middle of his desk, and took a crap right in the middle of his desk and shaped it into a pipe, like the pipe that the psychiatrist smoked. And then he escaped the hospital and never found him again.
Wow.
So much for schizophrenics not being able to do advanced planning, you know.
Absolutely right.
How did he do that? He got away. They never got him. They never found him. At least not while I was there. They didn't.
Yeah.
Wow. So you check the back of these psychology books, and it's like this guy got this information from this guy who got it from this guy, and he got it from that guy who got it from this guy. And very few of them were clinicians working on the front lines. You know, they might have been student counselors or school counselors or something like that. But as far as being on the front lines, you know, in the psychiatric unit or ER work, they just wasn't there. They're a bunch of academics. And, you know, the higher I went up the system, it's like in the PhD program, it's like publish or perish. And it didn't matter what they published. Matter of fact, you know, what was it? What percentage of what psychology published were not replicable? Let me see. I have that number here. It says 100 studies. Of 100 studies published in top-ranking journals in 2008, 75% of social psychology experiments and half of cognitive studies failed the replication test. that means they were virtually worthless. You know, they're just publishing because higher up in the ivory tower, you publish or perish. So they just publish all kinds of crap.
It's unbelievable.
And, when I was in the doctoral program, I was told, just publish this thing just to get it published. Just add it to the widgets of all these other guys who publish this stuff, and that's good enough. you know, I want to do something meaningful. I don't want to just play this stupid game.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I got into the state hospital, I started asking questions. You know,
I'm sure they were
a lot of questions
with that.
Right. So I asked all the psychiatrists, how, you know, what causes schizophrenia? Oh, it's a chemical imbalance in the brain. Some of the ones who were more honest would actually say, well, we don't really know. You know, but that was very, very few of them.
Right, right.
So the first thing I'm going, well, and I'm thinking, there wasn't anything that I could find published at the time on this. I'm like, well, you know, they're saying if this is a chemical imbalance, then why aren't they given some kind of test to see what's out of balance? And you know, there's like dozens of neurotransmitters in the brain.
Right. You know,
what chemicals are out of balance and by how much? No, there weren't any. I never saw a psychiatrist give any kind of test to test what was out of balance at all. They would just, it was like having a shotgun and shooting it and hoping to hit the target. And if one medication didn't work, they'd try another. But there was, you know, how did they know what was out of balance?
And these medications are toxic to the central nervous system.
Oh, right? Not only the central nerve, the peripheral nervous system too. It kills brain cells and it actually destroys the peripheral nervous system. And some of the long-term psych patients at the state hospital, they had what they called the Thorazine shuffle. And they could not walk normally. They kind of dragged and shuffled their feet there. Their central nervous system was burnt out. They lost a lot of brain cells. They're never going to come back to normal again. And that happens even with the modern, what do they call them, atypical antipsychotic medication. That's still happening. I mean, it's just, what they use is another medication to cover it. So back then they used Cogentin, which the patients loved. So it would mask the peripheral nervous damage and the shaking and right. I mean, they got a whole list of these awful side effects that these drugs cause. And they didn't like that. They didn't like that stuff. They didn't want to take it. It's not abusable medicine. I mean, it's not stuff that people would want to take.
Right.
But they're maintaining control of it because it's for the profit. You know, nobody's going to go into a drugstore, or even if you give it to them, you know, if they take it once, they'll never take it again. You know, but they're making a huge $3.8 billion a year selling these antipsychotic medications and all these other psychotropic drugs. All of them.
Outrageous.
No, it's crazy.
It's a segment of the population in which they can, you know, supply drugs to for profit, and there's no cure. There's no way.
Well, yeah, the drug companies are making so much money. They bought off Congress. You know, they bought off academia. You know, they'll provide money to the academics if they will write something that seems to support this chemical imbalance theory. So, you know, it's been refuted widely by a number of prominent psychologists. The Ronald Pius, the editor-in-chief of Psychiatric Times, you know, said that he doesn't know any reputable psychiatrist who's well-trained who believes that. You know, and there are many others that said the same thing. It's never been substantiated by any kind of empirical research whatsoever.
You know, and this is part of your book. This is part of,
you know. Yeah, that's part of it in there, because that has to be. You know, Ronald Pye says the demise of the chemical imbalance theory. He said, in view of the mounting evidence against it, after more than 20 years of being told the chemical imbalance in the brain causes mental illness, such as anxiety disorder and depression, the theory was finally put to rest when Dr. Pies, the editor-in-chief of the Psychiatric Times, stated on July 11th, 2011, that I don't believe I have ever heard a knowledgeable, well-trained psychiatrist make such a preposterous claim that mental patients have a chemical imbalance, except for perhaps market. In truth, the chemical imbalance notion was always a kind of urban legend, never a theory seriously propounded by well-informed psychiatrists. There's now conclusive evidence against it, that the drug companies, in order to sell their toxic drugs, are saying, yeah, all these emotions that you're having trouble dealing with, it's due to a chemical imbalance in your brain. You know, based on them interfering with the serotonin reuptake. That's it. It's like a correlation, and it's a very weak one. So, you know, the next time a doctor tells you you have a mental illness and take these drugs, ask them, where's his lab test? He won't have it.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. It's a crime against humanity.
Well, it is. And the truth is, they have no idea what the chemical imbalance of the brain is or should be. And yet they're, this propaganda they're putting out, to, and all these, you know, it just, you know.
I know. It's incredibly frustrating.
Very frustrating. And it, you know, it does so much damage because they're convincing people that they can't live without these friggin' drugs. You know, they're drugging kids now at a level that is incomprehensible.
I know. We talked, as we were talking prior, you know, when I'm out and I'm just observing people in general, I see so many people just, there's no light, disconnected.
Yeah.
You know, and it's part of this drugging of America, drugging of the planet.
That's exactly what they're doing. It's really bad too. I got some statistics here. It says this is just the ones on children, you know, let alone adults, and it does a lot more damage to children. It says where did this come from? Psychiatric drugs, children, drugs in America. Naturalnews.com says psychotropic drug statistics on children. More than 7.2 million kids are on psychiatric drugs.
Yeah. It's just
622,723 are children under the age of 5. 80,235 are on ADH drugs, which is amphetamine. 38,534 on antidepressants. 85,143 on antipsychotics, 389,558 on anti-anxiety drugs. I mean, they're drugging these kids senseless.
It's incredible.
And they're getting away with it.
And the parents have no recourse, because if you don't go along with the medical community at times, there's repercussions to the parents, and you know,
it depends on how bad the case is. You know, psychotics, schizophrenics are out of control. You know, they can force them to take medications.
So, Jerry, what do you think? You know, so it's horrific what you just shared there. Let me just wrap your head around those numbers: the drugging of America, the drugging of humanity, of the planet. It's outrageous and out of control. But you know, behind that, you know, you've learned through schizophrenics with the voices. So you feel obviously these, we're all affected because.
That's something people need to understand. It's schizophrenics are the far end of the normal curve, but these entities hit us all, and they hit us all by entering your mind with a negative thought about yourself or someone else that you believe to be your own.
Right.
And neither psychiatry nor psychology have ever asked the question of where do thoughts come from? And they can't wrap their mind around a mental illness that has no physical cause nor a physical cure. None of their drugs will affect a cure of schizophrenia. In some cases, if they administer them early enough when the voices are just starting, they can't get a grip. And if the person moves into a more productive lifestyle, they won't come back. But that's, you know, that's not real prevalent, but it does happen. But those drugs cure nothing. They merely suppress psychotic symptoms. That's it. While destroying the patient's peripheral nervous system and central nervous system. They're
and
very
families,
dangerous.
And families are destroyed. Families, you know, with their loved ones and all of that comes with the schizophrenic patient.
The voices hate families. Yeah. They hate children. And they hate anything positive. They hate church. They hate preachers. They hate the Bible. It's one of the first things I saw at the state hospital, that the patients who tried to read the Bible, the voices got louder. And I asked them, well, what are they saying? And I remember one of them said, What makes you think Jesus is going to save you? He couldn't even save himself. One of the voices saying that. And that they basically, you know, try to distract the person away from reading spiritual stuff. And you would, you know, hear psychiatrists saying these things are hallucinations without having done a single study on them. Not one. Not one.
I just cannot comprehend how they can get away with that. Who's at the top of that pyramid there who can allow that and can sanction this kind of behavior with... I just don't understand, you know, how far up does that go? How deep does the rabbit hole go? I mean, how can...
Oh, they bought off Congress. They've, you know... They bought off the chemical drug companies are they're behind all this, and the friggin' psychiatrists are their pill pushers. You can watch television, see all this crap that they're advertising, and 6 months later they're being sued because people are dying or being made sick. They don't care. They made their profits by them.
Well, it's distressing. Because there's a lot of people looking that need help, that need real help, that need guidance, that can understand the bigger picture, I think, that's going on outside of that disease label, right? And how to manage their own body, spirit, mind, and being learning to be responsible for themselves and for moving through this type of harassment, because it's harassment.
Well, you hit it right on the head with responsibility, because what these drug companies are pushing is non-responsibility for your behavior. So you do something screwed up, you get into trouble, and then you get depressed. Oh, well, yeah, come here and take this medicine. You don't have to be responsible for your behavior to feel good here. Just take this stuff. You know, and people are coping with these drugs. And like you said, it's working them out. They can't think freely. You know, they have these chemical, you know, casts on their brain.
Well, Jerry, maybe you can talk a little bit about some of the things you've seen, you know, the paranormal side of some of the things you've seen with patients who've...
Oh, yeah. He's got, the more I learned about how to weaken and get rid of these things, the more bizarre it got. And when I was working in the state hospital, I had to be real careful because I got in trouble with psychiatry for asking psychiatric patients about their voices. What are they telling you? So what I saw was that if the patient said, the voices are telling me to kill myself, psychiatry would jump like somebody stuck him in the butt with a hot poker, lock that guy down on suicide watch, and drug him senseless until he was no longer suicidal. So they reacted to what the voices said when it came to the patient being suicidal, but never did they ask what else are the voices telling these guys. You know, and they didn't seem curious about it. None of the staff there did. So I started asking, what else are they telling you beside that? And it was all these horrible things. It was always negative. It was consistently negative. So, you know, a hallucination is random. I mean, it's positive, negative, it's all over the place. So they're calling these things hallucinations, but they run fixed patterns, and that pattern is unswervingly negative, and it's unswervingly negative against themselves and everybody else, and it consistently gets them in trouble if they listen to it. You know, something that runs a pattern like that consistently is not a random hallucination.
Right.
It's running a fixed pattern, and the question becomes, what holds it to that pattern?
Right.
What force holds it to that pattern?
Yeah.
So the more I dug into that, the more bizarre things got.
Please share. Yeah.
So when I got to the prison, I mean, that's where I could really start digging into these things. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that when they started closing down the state hospitals that were really efficient at treating these guys, they dumped them all into the street and said, oh, yeah, well, they're all going to go to mental health centers and we'll provide the medication there. But even in the state hospitals, when those medications were handed to them, as soon as they turned around, they'd spit them in the trash can. They ain't going to go out of their way to go to the mental health center to get that crap. Mm-hmm. So all these guys became homeless and they're laying in the street. They're committing crimes. They're getting thrown in prison. And the prison filled up with the same patients that the state hospitals had before. So now they're paying twice as much to treat these guys in a situation where they're infuriating them. So they get a psychotic patient, the mental health care in the prisons is really bad. And they're, you know, if they can get away with not giving a psychotic patient antipsychotics, they'll do it. They don't even think about it. They're not causing enough trouble to cause to warrant medications. They won't give it to them.
Right.
So here they are in a negative environment with all these gangsters, and the gangsters are turning them into torpedoes. So, you know, they'll take away the patient's medication, and they'll say, "Hey, this gangster in this other gang, he's planning to get you. You better do something to him before he gets you." So here they get this psychotic guy, and they sick him on the next gang member, and he does a hit, and then, oh, he's crazy, you know, so they increase his sentence. And then when his sentence run out, they release him onto the street. So here's the newspapers, like some guy escapes from prison, and the newspapers are good. Now, you talk about insanity. Newspapers are going, "Oh, man, there's a murderer loose. He's running around in our community. Lock your doors. Everybody be scared. Get your guns out." The freaking prisons are releasing, you know, 25 to 50 of these guys, you know, a month.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Much worse than any guy who escaped. You know, there were some they released that I knew they were going to kill somebody within just a few months. You know, once their sentence is up, they give them, you know, what is it, a month's worth of drugs, antipsychotic drugs, which they're not going to take. They give them $50 and say, "Okay, get out of here." And release them into the community. In Tucson, we have several huge prisons here. So in South Tucson, it's a war zone.
It's all of our problem. I mean, this is
I mean, what comes around goes around. So you throw these guys in prison, you infuriate them, they get worse, and then you release them on society. Yeah, it's all our problem.
It's all our problem, and it's growing because as we were talking, I see, you know, more and more people seem to be coming unhinged, but there is at the same time other people awakening to look at these things and take in the concept that thoughts are things, not all thoughts are our own, and so forth. So there seems to be some kind of balance. I'm hopeful, but how do we help these people? How do we help their families? Because there's so much devastation and destruction, and what we're talking about, I guess, is really possession. That's level.
Yeah, the first thing is to know that, I mean, psychiatry will tell you that that's the only treatment. You know, their drugs are the only treatment. You know? Now, that the only reason those drugs work is because they calm down the patient. You know? And these entities, these voices, they feed off of the negative emotional energy they generate with their crappy messages. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, we are taught from the time we're kids that our thoughts are our own. Every thought that comes into your head belongs to you. That ain't true.
It sure isn't.
It ain't true at all.
I agree.
So, you start
paying attention to your thoughts.
Yep. That's the first thing. And then realize that every negative thought about yourself or somebody else is put there by these entities.
Yeah.
You know,
that's right.
In all of us. And they enter your mind, and they want you to believe that that thought belongs to you. Mm-hmm. Unless you realize that those thoughts are not your own, and you start acting on those thoughts, then you create the negative emotional energy, and then there's repercussions, and it just keeps going and going and going, and they're just feeding off of that.
Yeah. And people's lives are spiraling out of control. And it's like learning mindfulness and paying attention to what external stimulation is coming your way to be still enough and centered enough to even hear it, because we're so distracted here on the planet. Look over here, go over there, do this.
They want to keep you. They want to keep you distracted so you can't think for yourself.
Absolutely.
They got everybody working constantly. They come home, they pass out, they go do it again.
It's crazy. You know, we talked about addictions, and so you obviously feel that that's a large part of the addictions, whether it's alcohol, drugs. I mean, look at pornography, just look at that whole industry, right? And you just look at the feeding frenzy with all of this. I'm no stranger to addiction, because in my own family, like I was telling you with my nephew, which I just want to mention his name, Jason Miller, and today, 11 years ago, he passed away from a drug addiction. And we could see you know, when this force was upon him, I mean, it was obvious. And when there was a moment of light where he would come back into the soul, you know, moving in and out of these, all I can say is levels of consciousness.
Well, I think anybody who's lived with a drug addict or an alcoholic especially can actually watch them change their personality.
Totally.
Something else takes over.
Absolutely.
It's not them anymore.
No.
And probably one of the most interesting cases I had at the state prison was one day I was told that our unit was going to get an Apache who was a chronic alcoholic. And he was so violent that they couldn't deal with him on the reservation anymore. Mm-hmm. So they were sending him down to our unit. And I was told that he was kind of like this quasi evil medicine man that could do strange things. And kind of like a corrupt skinwalker or something like that. He could cast skeleton on people. And
yeah.
So when I brought him, when he arrived, and I'm watching him, he's crashing through. He's not going through the normal procedures. He didn't go through the classification center at Lambert at all. He just crashed right through that. And they shot him right to my unit. And when he got there, I had the security bring him up and told him, okay, I'm you know, to the psych department. I said, I'll be your psych in, while you're here, and I'll be checking on you once a month. And man, he looked at me like, I'd rather cut your guts open, spill them all over the room than say another word to you. So I'm feeling this vibe, and I'm just like, okay, I'll see you next month. You know? I went to the head of the Indians, the Indian gangs there, and I always got along good with those guys. And I asked the head of the Indians, I said, well, what's with this guy? And he said, you be very careful of him. But I would never meet anybody like this again. So I just kept calling him month after month. And it took like 6 months before I could talk to him for 20 minutes. And he would tell me all the strange stuff he could do.
Wow.
Cast spells, you know, spirits chasing him. Very, very strange stories. But
right.
I could tell he wasn't lying.
Yeah, you know? Right.
And finally I got up the nerve to ask him. I said, well, you know, if you can do all that kind of stuff, how come you can't stay sober? And I was like bracing, like, okay, he's going to go off on that one, you know.
Yeah.
And he looks at me and he goes, because of the spirits of dead alcoholics. He said there was a bar in Phoenix where they were piled up so high over that bar that they disappeared into the sky. And he said they took control of his girlfriend. He could see this. And they walked her into traffic in Phoenix and she got hit and killed by a truck.
God.
And he said if he went anywhere near that bar with any alcohol in him, that they would just jump in and they would start telling me, yeah, go ahead, drink. It's okay. It's all right. So, you know, you look at this building up to a drink stuff, you know, it's all kind of mental stuff. Oh, yeah, you can do that. You can go to that bar and not drink. You know, it's like step by step by step.
Right.
And where are these thoughts coming from?
Yeah. The compulsion, the obsession. God, it's incredible. I mean, this is, you know, out there kind of stuff. And like you said in the beginning, you know, only those who are drawn to hear this are going to be able to receive it, because this is truly what is going on the planet. I see it not in the way you have seen it, but I mean, you can just have conversations with people and you can really sense today, you know, like where they are or where they're not. They're not even fully present. So where are we in that state of consciousness, you know?
Well, yeah. And you look at, you know, if you're just tracking your thoughts, I mean, I do this a lot, and the junk you think about, it's like,
right?
Well, what did that even come from?
Right.
And it's a waste of time, and it's always trying to move you into the future or the past and out of the present.
Totally.
And so if you try to stay in the present, you'll see these thoughts, and you track your thoughts that come in there and go, oh yeah, you ought to be afraid of this. You gotta be afraid of that. What if this? Yeah. And the news. Oh boy, the news. You turn on the news. It's all negative. All negative.
Yeah, it's massive programming. I mean, we're a programming society. It's incredible. Fear, chaos,
right.
rage, you know. Where's the goodness of the soul, the purity of light, you know, the goodness of,
they're constantly pitting us against one another.
Totally.
You know, so, and that generates that negative emotional energy that they feed off of. And if they can start a war, that's a hog trough for them.
I agree. You know, I'll say this, you know, when I was little, I could always see things. Well, I can see things now too. I sense them, you know, entities and energies. And when my mom would be sleeping in her room, I mean, at night, I literally could see these things coming in and messing at night, you know, with dream time. And I used to think, that's not real.
Were they the shadow people?
Yeah. And beings and all kinds of things. And, you know, it took me a long time to like to understand what this all was, because I've been seeing things like that very young. Right. And, I was just so happy to have come across you, Jerry, because you have the clinical background to tie it all together, and people will listen to your message. And I think you have a fantastic message. So what do we do to try to assist people besides listening to their thoughts and paying attention, writing them down, you know, and taking a look, just pausing? What else?
Well, you know, I think for schizophrenics, they may have to start out on antipsychotic drugs.
Right.
And schizophrenics who will break into three different classes. They'll be the ones who realize that the voices are not them, that there's some kind of demonic influence. They don't know what to do about them, but they know that they're not who they are, that they're, right, they're something separate.
Mm-hmm.
The second class was ones that just really don't know. You know, they think that, well, they may be entities that are different than they are, but they might be their subconscious. They're really confused about that. The worst off of the three bunches are going to be the ones who believe what psychiatry says about, mm-hmm, it's a chemical imbalance in your brain. There's nothing you can do about it except take these toxic drugs. And you're going to have to take these toxic drugs for the rest of your life while your nervous system is being rotted out and your brain is being killed, because that's what we say it is, and they won't listen to any other, you know, shamans have been curing this stuff for
that's right,
thousands of years. Dr. Urmark, he's a professor in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a journal article saying that he watched a shaman cure a number of schizophrenics, and he published this in a reputable journal. And, you know, all he was saying is, you know, the medical system might want to take a look at this, because they don't have anything to cure schizophrenia, and this guy's doing it. And the backlash he got from that was just incredible. You know, they just attacked him all up and down one side and down the other. It was just, they just would not even tolerate the thought. So
it's outrageous. It's just outrageous. I mean...
And these are the guys who are programming new psychiatrists, you know, coming on. Yeah, this is a chemical imbalance. You know, these are the medicines you give for it. And you know, they don't want to even hear it. They, you know.
Well, I'm grateful, because there was always something about you, obviously, that you were able to, didn't like authority, and you were able to listen to some resonance deeper in your wisdom of your soul to see what actually is going on. So that must have been hard.
Well, yeah, it was. I mean, I had to fly under the radar a lot. But you were asking earlier about, you know, some of the weird things that happened.
Yeah.
You know, for years I denied that, you know, I think, well, this is some kind of facet of their subconscious. This is, you know, this isn't, I just didn't want to believe it. But, you know, the more that I went along and the more they told me about what these voices are saying, I went, well, you know, it appears that the voices are driving this, because they listen to these things, they act on them, and they get into trouble, and these voices are constantly attacking. So it's kind of like, okay, what can I do to interfere with these voices?
Right.
And, you know, one of the first things I found was the 23rd Psalm. They hate that. You know, they hate it. Patients have told me that the repetition of the 23rd Psalm is like throwing the voices on a hot frying pan. That's how they react to it.
Wow.
So I started out with that, handing out, and this was at the prison, handing out the 23rd Psalm. And when they used it, it worked. The voices didn't like it. And what I found is anything that upset the voices, I was going to give them more of it. Right. I couldn't do that at the state hospital because right. it's unwritten rule is you don't upset psychotic patients because you never know what they're going to do. But in the prison, they're all set up for that. Somebody goes off, they got all these guards coming at you and nobody's going to believe, he was asking me about the voices and I went nuts. And it's like, they believed that all prisoners were liars and scumbags and you can't believe anything they say. And there's something, they're almost, semi-human kind of thing. So, I could get away with that stuff there. And also knowing how far to push them without them going off.
Right.
I found more and more stuff, the 23rd Psalm. Then they started losing the 23rd Psalm or forgetting it. So I gave them a rubber band. We needed some way to shut the voices up where they could remember because the voices were just carrying away. Mm-hmm. Put a rubber band on their wrist. And I said, every time the voices start, you snap that rubber band and then you repeat the 23rd Psalm. Now, we took off on that from the book, 30 Years Among the Dead, written in the 1920s by a psychiatrist who would give these patients static electric shocks, and the voices would leave temporarily. And then his wife was a psychic, and she would walk them into the light. And if they disappeared into the light, that voice would never come back. Now, I tried that, and it worked. If you could get them to walk into the light and get somebody to pick them up, that voice, that particular voice was gone.
Wow.
Now, the others wouldn't, weren't. And right. if they didn't change the way they thought, more would come in. So it's not good enough to just get rid of these things. You then have to move the patient onto a positive spiritual path of some kind.
Right. And find that point.
Otherwise, they'll come back.
Right. And find that point of the soul, humanity, what consciousness, the heart, to get inside, to expand that light within. It's incredible. So that's a live program, right? Is something?
There was that. So we started out with that, and then the more I applied that, the that's a lie thing, because I had a version of it before Sherry really made it real sharp and clear, and. I always had in the prison a group of like maybe 10 or 12 psychotic inmates, criminally insane inmates, who I had an agreement with that they would tell me in real time whatever their voices were telling them while I was working with them. Now, a lot of them wouldn't do that. But I had this group, and as I found things that pissed off the voices, I would tell them, try this and tell them, come back next week and tell me what happened. I was finding things that, pissed off the voices and kind of weakened them so they didn't have as much power. Mm-hmm. And these guys started coming in saying, the voices are really getting pissed off with you. And then one guy who I'd been working with for over 6 months, as he was leaving the office one day, he turns around and he goes, you know what you're doing is dangerous, don't you? I hadn't thought about it. I went, I was thinking these things are stuck in their head. They can't get out. They can't get me. They're stuck in their head and not my head. So he just looked at me. I looked at him and he walked away. And I'm like, what's that all about? So he kept getting better and better and better, because he was working toward that. And then one day he comes in without an appointment, knocks on my door, and he goes, the voices want to talk to you. I said, they want to talk to me personally? That never happened before. Usually it would be the patient would tell me what they're saying, and I'd tell the patient, I'll tell them to go soak their heads in the toilet or something. There was always this, they didn't like me. Right. I didn't like them. Nobody liked anybody else. So, he comes in one day and he said, the voices want to talk to you. And I said, they want to talk to me personally? He said, yeah, they want to talk to you. I said, well, okay. It's kind of like, what's going on here? I said, come on in, tell me what they have to say. And like I was telling you earlier, he looks at me and I said, well, what do they have to say? And his voice changes slightly and he goes, you have no right to interfere with our way of life.
Wow.
And right after those words came out, the inmate goes, those weren't my words. I didn't say those. Those were the voices that said that. And I didn't say it. And I'm like, whoa. That freaked me out. At that point, I knew that these things, there was no doubt in my mind that these things were not the patient. They weren't his subconscious. This was our, I mean, plural.
Right. Was,
mm-hmm. You know, this was a group of them kind of telling me to, you know, back off. And, you know, I didn't do it. So things started getting a little more intense from there. So as this guy continued to get better, I was like, I picked up a book by Miguel Ruiz.
Yeah.
I forgot what it was called. It wasn't the
Four Agreements.
Might have been the Four Agreements. But it was talking about these entities as parasites. And I've noticed that the schizophrenics I work with, when the voices attacked them, they had no energy. You know, they were just drained. And for years, I thought that was because of the horrible things the voices were telling them, keeping them awake, you know, battering them all the time.
Right.
It was the anxiety. And then a situation occurred while I was working for the jail of the prison. I mean, where a psychotic prisoner was locked in with another guy who the gangsters were trying to kill because he snitched off a drug deal. Nobody could be under more pressure than that guy was. He had that psychotic guy standing over his bed while he was sleeping at night, staring down at him. And the gangsters had already stabbed him once for snitching off the drug deal. And here he is trapped in a cell with this psychotic guy. With the gangsters wanted him dead so bad that they got into trouble to get into the CDU so they could have a chance to get this guy. I mean, they really wanted him. Nobody was could be under more stress than that guy, short of war. So I saw these two guys, one after the other, because the captain said, you need to do something about this psychotic guy because he's freaking out his cellmate. And the cellmate wrote me a letter saying, you know, you need to do something about this guy because I can't deal with him. I can't sleep with him in there. So I saw him one after another, and the guy that the gangsters were trying to kill, he just bounded up the steps, you know, up the catwalk and then into the office. And he had plenty of energy when he was talking to me. I mean, he was upset. He was anxious. He was a bit paranoid, but he had a lot of energy. And he went back, and then I pulled in the psychotic guy. And he wasn't on any meds, and the voices were kicking the crap out of him. He could barely make it up that staircase. He just drugged, he just shuffled into the office, and his voice tone was low, and he didn't have any energy, and he could barely speak, and he was very depressed. And after I finished with him, I said, well, no, it's not the anxiety. You know, wow. That's not what's causing that energetic drain, but right. The energetic drain was consistent.
Right.
So I came up with this scale, like how much energy do you have before the voices come, how much during, how much after. And I gave that to a number of my schizophrenic prisoners, and it was consistent. And they had a significantly more amount, and this is subjective, but significantly more energy before the voices came. And after the voices attacked, they were down in the dumps. One after another would endorse this. So I'm going, well, it's the voices are somehow doing this, that's somehow taking their energy. But you couldn't get them to see it. They were being blocked from seeing it. So, you know, I tell them, okay, you've experienced the voices 1,000 times in the last couple of months, and each time that you did, your energy level dropped to zero. What do you think your energy went? Well, I don't know. Okay, if you stuck your hand in the fire 1,000 times and each time you got burned, what's burning? They had no trouble seeing the fire. You know, so whatever these things were blocking that information from entering their minds. And I found that's really strange.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that with the drain on energy because, you know, pretty much you function, you go throughout your day, and then there are moments where sometimes you just feel completely exhausted, you know, and you can feel like a general malaise come over you. And that's when I always go into high alert. I go, okay, wait a second.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, it comes out of nowhere.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not associated to anything. That's them. No,
that's right.
That's them. So they can insert that, you know, debilitating state, which then generates negative thoughts. Or they can go the other way around, and they have access to your entire memory. They can pull up rotten stuff you did that you forgot about 20 years ago.
Yeah,
pull it in your face and rub it in your face until you start thinking negative.
It's incredible. It's just incredible what we're talking about today and what we're sharing with others. And I think just valuable information because what you learned is like at the extreme end of the scale with the schizophrenic patients that you were working to help, but how we're all truly affected.
They hit us all the time. You know, so you have to watch your thoughts. So the next bizarre thing that happened was I brought the, after they warned me, you know, you have no right to interfere with our way of life. I didn't stop. And I'm like, screw you. You know, you're destroying my patients. And I brought the book in by Miguel Ruiz that talked about them being energy parasites. And I asked this guy who warned me, I said, I'm going to read this paragraph to you. I want you to, because I learned from them. I mean, they're the ones who taught me everything I know. And psychiatry won't even listen to them. Why are you hallucinating? You're mentally ill. You got nothing to teach us. You're stupid. You're just a human waste. I take these drugs and get out of my face. And, but man, they have a lot to teach us if you could listen. So I brought this in and I started reading that paragraph. And when it started talking about the energy drain, all of a sudden from behind my head was this loud electrical crackle. It was like an arc welder. I mean, and I stopped. And this, I looked at the inmate, and he's just staring at me with this glazed look on his face, like, you know, just looking, not saying anything. And, you know, I hear this thing, and it moves over to the right wall, and it just starts crack, 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 all the way up the wall. And it wasn't like 10 seconds or something. I mean, this went on for like 20, 30 seconds. And after it crawled up, I'm trying to see what it is, and I can't see anything, but I didn't want to take my eyes off of him because I'm going, he's going to attack me. So I pushed my chair back against the wall, and I'm kind of like back and forth trying to see what this is and keeping an eye on him at the same time. And then it gets up to the top, and it starts crackling across the back of the office, so I could watch him and real quick look up and see. I saw nothing. I smelled nothing. It was just that electrical crackle. It just sounded like electricity, like an arc welder. And I asked him, I said, you hear that? And he just stared at me. He didn't say anything. He's like,
oh. Or were you just like freaking out at that
moment? I was freaking out. I mean, I was totally freaking out. And then it comes down the left wall and jumps into a Rubbermaid trash can at my left leg. And it's crackling in there. So I look down, there's nothing in there. And you know, I look up at him and it stops. As quick as it started. And then he says, I gotta leave. And I'm thinking, get out of here, go. Get out of here. You know, and it's like after he shuffled down the hall, I was like completely blown away. I mean, I was like, what the hell just happened? And of course, you can't tell anybody about this. I mean, you know, hey, man, I was working with a psychotic patient. My office erupted and there's all this electrical stuff. And, you know, it scared the hell out of me. And I don't know what's happening. Yeah, boy, yeah, I'd be locked up with him.
When you had, Jerry, you know, when you had that moment when you realize that there is something outside of ourselves that are creating this, that moment where it all came to, when that, you really could take that in, right? You know, that there's a force externally.
Yeah, it was mind blowing. I mean, the first time when they warned me, I was, you know, I was shocked. You know, right. It was like I canceled my appointments for the rest of that day and just sat there and stared out the window and contemplated what had just happened or tried to. But this one, you know, this one showed that they could affect physical reality. They could make that crackling. So that had implications that were, you know, horrendous. So if they could affect physical reality, that means they weren't stuck in this guy's head. You know, they were doing this crackling. So it took me, I don't know, 2-3 months before I had the courage to call this guy back.
Yeah.
And when I did, he came in, he looked good. You know, I was expecting him to be a wreck. I was totally expecting him to be a total wreck. You know, if they could do that, what are they going to do to him?
Right.
And he looked good, which surprised me because I'm thinking, well, they probably tore him to pieces. And he said, well, I've been practicing some of the stuff you told me, and I'm able to hold them at a certain level. And we did some small talk, and then I asked him, I said, the last time you were here, did you hear that crackling in my office? And he said, yeah, I did, but I was surprised you did. And I said, what the hell was that? He said, that was them. I said, your voices? He said, yeah, that was the voices. I said, what were they trying to do? And he said, they were trying to scare you off. And he said, well, they did a damn good job of it. So I asked him, you know, I remembered him getting up and saying, oh, I gotta leave, and it was with a strange affect. And I asked him, what were you thinking as you left my office that day? I said, what were the voices telling me? And he said, they were telling me to go get a shank, which is a knife, and stick it in your gut. And I'm like, well, I worked with this guy for, you know, 6 months. I know him real well. We've been through some stuff together, and he appeared to be getting better. And I asked him, said, well, why didn't you do it? He said, I couldn't find one.
Okay.
And I'm like,
wow.
Okay, that doesn't sound good. So, Jerry, yeah, that was freaky.
Are you finding that, you know, with trauma, obviously, just being on the planet, there's trauma. But, I mean, there's serious breaches in the energy field or the consciousness, or there's trauma for a lot of the schizophrenic patients that...
They're usually traumatized before they get that way. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you look at their history, they were sexually abused, burned. I mean, these things can smell negative emotional energy like sharks can smell blood. Absolutely. And they just find these people and they start pouring it on. The more negativity, the more negative emotional energy they can, you know, create, the better they feed, the stronger they get.
It's really, it's
spooky, and they're around us all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
And they don't like the thing they hated most, what they went off the most when I tried to, I couldn't tell all patients that I worked with in the ER that these things are separate from who they are, and that they're sucking their energy, and that that's why the negative thoughts are coming. But the ones I felt I could talk to, the voices went nuts when I broached that idea. When I went to tell these patients that they were energy parasites, they went absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was another pattern that emerged there too. Mm-hmm. And it was really strange, and it still is kind of freaky even today. So they would tell the patient when I told them, I'd ask the patient, I'd say, are you hearing the voices right now? And they go, no. Then I'd ask them, when was the last time you heard them? And he'd say, a week, a couple of days, hours ago, something. And I'd tell them, I said, well, you're going to hear them in about 5 minutes. And they're going to be screaming bloody murder. And this is what they're going to tell you. They're going to tell you, I'm stupid, I'm crazy, don't listen to anything I say. And because I'm a quack or whatever. The second thing they're going to tell you is to get away from me, get out of the office, leave the ER, or run, get away from me.
Right.
And if you don't do either of those things, what they're going to tell you is to attack me. And, most of them would say, oh, I wouldn't do that. And I said, well, I know you wouldn't, but that's what they're going to tell you. So as I broached that topic and went to tell them that these things are energy parasites, and look at your energy level after they come, and these things would go crazy. They would just explode, and it would go bam, 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 right down the line, just what I told them that they were going to say, usually in that same order, sometimes not.
Right.
And sometimes even before I got to tell them, you know, that thing, they would tell them, the voices were telling them that I was nuts and to get away from it. But it would happen in that order, bam, bam, bam. And then I would, there's ways to make them shut up for a while.
Right.
And I could do that. And I said, you want me to make them shut up? And, yeah. So, you know, I'd visualize around them a white light and put them in a white light prison with walls 3 feet thick.
Right.
And then imagine that white light, because thoughts are things, and these things materialize in their universe. And I'd put a net and see a net move through them and sweep these things out and then throw them in this prison of light. And then the physical symptoms the patient was experiencing would disappear. So if they're nervous or they're jittery or they're
right,
twitchy or something, or headache, or that would disappear. But they would still hear these things talking, you know, through that light.
Right.
So I imagine duct tape being put around their mouths, and then they would shut up. And some of them, the patient would tell me, well, I can hear them going,
wow.
I can't hear what they would say. But, yeah, that would give me enough time to get this information through to the patient.
Right.
Without these things screaming and hollering at them all the time. And once they got it, then it's harder for the voices to get rid of it.
Yeah.
They will do everything they can to block that information out, that these things are entities. They're not their thoughts, and that they're parasites, they're energetic parasites.
And again, like we say, it's affecting all of us. If we could all just slow down a little bit and pay attention and get in the present moment.
Well, there's Eckhart Tolle, I think. Yeah. He's got a number of YouTubes on there about how to stay in the present moment.
That's right.
And it's something you have to move toward, because I think Joe Dispenza said, if you're not in the present moment, you're running a program.
Absolutely.
You know, you're running some program that somebody else. In
present moment, 0 point. Here's where all amazing things can happen.
All amazing things happen. But, you know, you're going to be wherever you put your attention. So if you focus on a negative thought, you're giving that thought your energy. You're making it, you know, stronger. But you can't blot it out either, because it'll get stronger.
Well,
so you have to acknowledge it and then just let it pass through and go, I don't want to deal with it. You know, that isn't my thought. It doesn't belong to me. I want nothing to do with it, and let it pass through.
That's right.
But yeah, if you try to block it, it'll blow up.
Right. Absolutely. Blissed out thoughts, though. You know, sometimes you can be in states of bliss, manic, but not necessarily manic, but we call it love and light syndrome. I mean, there's bliss states too that are artificial, because again, you're not really, we're looking for like a more balanced, neutral place to hold with resonance and frequency. But I see a lot of blissed out distortions too. Have you noticed that?
No.
Feeling so good, feeling high, high.
Not in the people I work with.
Yeah, right.
Unless they were on some kind of drugs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I see it operating that way too. I see it pulling people slightly away from being, it like overrides the program of being able to hear accurately of what these thoughts or things, mm-hmm. like skews perception in that level too, I have noticed.
That's interesting.
Yeah, So it's really just 0 point and holding steady. I think we're almost at an hour, aren't we?
Goes fast.
Wow. I want to talk to you again. This is
all right.
Great. Wow. Jerry.
Be glad to.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. Yeah. I really have enjoyed being able to spend time with you, and I really appreciate you taking the time, and I want to wish you a lot of luck on your book. I that's coming in December, and I hope it just reaches a lot of people to help empower people and help people to understand what we're up against here on planet Earth, because clearly there's something going on.
Oh yeah,
not in our best interest.
And they don't want you to wake up to it, and it is not in your best interest.
Absolutely.
So in the meantime, refer people to Sherry's That's a Lie program. Okay, so they have to understand that these voices are not theirs. They don't belong to them.
Right.
And that they're energy parasites before they can even put that program to use.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's some education and concepts that we need to bring in. But even your patients were able to, some of them were able to understand it. So I don't think it's so challenging for some of us who aren't in that level of infiltration. Certainly if we have open hearts.
Well, the voices are going to react negatively toward anybody who tries to interfere with their doing.
Yeah.
So people have to be careful.
Yes, very. I know. Very, very much so. Well, thank you again. And I don't want to hang up. I don't want to disconnect from Zoom. I want to keep on going, but I don't want to take any more of your time on the holiday weekend, Jerry. So thank you.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. When the book comes out, we'll do it again.
Okay, yes, I'm looking forward to it. And thank you again, and have a beautiful rest of your weekend. And I'll be in touch.
Okay.
I'll reach out to you. I'm looking forward to the book. Thanks again. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Bye.